Welcome to The Spread. I'm your host, Carrie Sikender, and today I'm joined by Michael Mazera. Michael and I met when he had recently acquired halfmarathons.net, which is the biggest online guide for finding half marathons. It straddles this line between travel and running. And most recently, he's acquired a company called Rogue Expeditions, where he's taking running travel to the next level and expanding the possibility to integrate running into vacations. I'm really excited to talk with Michael today about the creative ways he's incorporating taking over existing companies. He's the first one on our show who has acquired companies, and so it's a different lens into how creativity plays into sports business. Welcome to the show, Michael. First, just tell me what drew you to running in the first place, because now you've made it such a big focus in your life professionally, and I'm curious what the inspiration originally was.
It's so funny because I get to tell this story a couple times a week because it's so ridiculous. And I think I was at a company, I was hired at a company when I was 20 years old and worked there while I was in college for about 6 or 7 years. And on the sixth year, I realized that I had kind of stopped growing. I was living in Brooklyn at the time. And one day I was like, I'm going to go run a half marathon without training. I just put on a pair of not running shoes.
Like zero training.
Training at all.
You weren't running like a mile here and there.
Nothing.
Nothing. Okay.
I went to the gym and I was a water polo player, but that was years before.
Okay.
So then I go out over the Williamsburg Bridge and up to the Upper West Side. And then I come back and I hit the 13 miles. And then I go, oh, I can stop now. And then I sit down on the Williamsburg Bridge and I can't get up. And I think I like crawl, like I'm really just holding the side rails. And I live in East Williamsburg. So I think I have somebody pick me up or I hobble there. And I was like, this is amazing. And then I set this goal to do a marathon with no training. I said 30 days of training.
Oh, God.
I was like, okay. Because I figured I could do that. But then what I thought it was all mind over matter. That was what I really believed it was. And then when running, you realize evolutionarily, humans are meant to be running, but we sit all day. So our muscles aren't in the way that they're supposed to be. So I got injured right away. You just can't do it. I eventually did do it. It took me like 5.5 hours and I cried the whole time. I eventually did the marathon. And what I realized kind of in my own personal journey was that humans are really good at having external markers for progress. We have a lot of proxies for that. So you can have revenue or traffic numbers or things like that. And that makes us feel good that we're making progress. How do we track internally whether we're making progress on ourselves, where there's not really a lot of benchmarks? How do you know you're better than you were yesterday or you're just kind of winging it? This is one of those things that I really felt like I could see myself get better internally. I knew that going faster and going further meant that I was getting stronger internally as well as like physically. And I think, and this might be societally, but I think we're really hardwired to look for these markers of progress in our lives. And I was definitely a type of person that was outcome over process, which means I would sacrifice myself and my happiness for the end result. I think really, the awakening was, this was the first time in my life that I liked the process, that the joy of the work was intrinsically bringing me joy. And that shifted my perspective in my life. And then I just kept running after that. I'm constantly injured, always like a freak accident injury. Like I'm falling off curbs and I lost feeling in my left leg.
Okay.
I'm either running or I'm a person waiting to be running again. And it's now made up a very core belief in my identity and gives me a lot of fulfillment. So that's where I am today with it.
Okay, that is a really great story. I'm glad that you get to tell it all the time.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, I've done a couple half marathons and not in a while. I probably did the last one 10 years ago. I ran cross country in high school and we used to do it at the end of each season. And then I did one as an adult in my early 20s, but I was just dead by the end. I could get up. I wasn't stuck.
Sure. Well, you probably trained for it. Yeah.
I also kind of didn't. I was just running casually and then was like, let me try going 13 miles. And it was okay. But I do see the benefit of training after having done that.
Totally.
That's really interesting that you talk about how it shifted your perspective on kind of what your actually valuing. That seems huge. For me, that's something I think I'm a millennial. You might be too. And I feel like we were taught this narrative of the end goal is the only thing that matters. Love your job, but do it because you need to be successful. And I feel like I personally have also gone through this shift to really, really value the process over the end result, because that's how we're spending our time. So it's interesting to hear that running kind of gave you that.
Yeah. I think there's a comedian who kind of talks about this concept of our parents' generation and how they viewed their responsibility to the world. And he makes this funny thing where he was like, if you wanted to take a picture, you had to put film in a camera and then go to CVS and wait in line and then get like photos developed. And he's like, because we got all that time back with the technology, the millennial generation has all this time for navel gazing, which is what do I like to do? Where parents' generation was kind of fighting over a tuna sandwich about who was going to make it and what the kids were going to do. And so I think work for them became kind of an obligation and an act of service to their family, which is like, I'm going to do something I don't like on behalf of, this is my expression of love towards you. And the next generation, we go, wow, parents, I'm really happy you did that. But also, it would have been nice if you did other things. I didn't need you to work all the time. We get to kind of balance that out. And maybe our children's generation will be like, hey, we wish you worked more. So that it's all these counterbalances. But I think totally we're in a position where our parents pushed off their right to own their own joy, their own self-authorship until 65, because that was the thing that was promised to them if they worked hard and were unhappy for a long period of time. And then we get to go and flex on that a little bit. There's a certain amount of discomfort we're willing to put up with, but mostly we're trying to optimize for happiness now.
Yeah, totally. So on that note, I'm curious to dig into your process with, let's start with Half Marathon Guide first. So can you tell us about just your story of how you acquired it and what you're doing now, kind of with the lens of the process that you're in the midst of?
Sure. Are you a fan or familiar with The Infatuation, the restaurant review?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Okay.
I've loved that. I think they just knocked it out of the park, and I want them to do it for travel. But my on-ramp into running was through racing. I think there's millions of people who, when they decide they're going to take their first step into this idea of running, they go to a shoe store and they get onboarded through brand, so that there's these Nikes and Adidas and they make billions of dollars a year. And then you go on the racing side, which was my journey, which was like, I'm just going to pick a half marathon or a self-guided one and do it. Mm-hmm. I was like, where's the Nike of racing? And it's like, there's the New York City Marathon. And then there's a couple of other ones like Boston. And then this huge gap between everybody else. I think there's like mechanical factors here, which is like cities are only so big to handle so many people. And there's how many people are willing to fly into a certain location. But one thing I realized from not being in running to then going into running and having like a running community a little bit was like, people know what races are cool and fast and beautiful and well-produced. And I was like, who's all the cool kids with tattoo sleeves and short shorts that decided that we're all going to run grandma's marathon this year? What I saw was what The Infatuation did was they took this perspective that it's your friend who knows a tremendous amount about running. It's not like a literary food critic. It's your friend who's going to go and is speaking on behalf of you and what they know you like and what you would index on and the quality of experience that you're looking for. In the acquisition, I'll tell you the broad vision before I actually knew that it wasn't going to work. I saw that there was four calendars online that all reported the same information in different sorts of ways, which is, what race is it? When is it? Where is it? If you combined the traffic of all of those, it was going to be bigger than the largest running media company, like Runner's World. So I was like, you could build a media company that took the utility of search for races and converted that into the biggest running media company on earth. And that was a great idea for a period of time. And I was making progress towards that. And then Google kind of AI came around. And in general, the directories are just commoditized information. You have to develop some intellectual property in order for people to want to go back to you as a brand, which is a really hard thing to do. And we can talk about brand later, but I realized that there was too much risk in going down that path into acquiring all the calendars. So what I realized was Half Marathons had gone up for sale. It was, had been around for 20 years. It had a really loyal group of people who were going to it. Half marathons were the shortest distance that you will train and travel for. So it really is, for a lot of people, their indoctrination into a lifelong career of endurance running. If you were going to buy the marathon guide, far fewer people run them, and you can only do one to two a year, where people run a half marathon every month. The idea was converted into the infatuation of running, for specifically racing, where I could go and say, for the first time ever, it is a directory that you can search by quality of experience in racing. Can you bring your pet? Mm-hmm. Where is a half marathon in Southern California that has mountain views? You can bring a pet in a stroller. There's no way to conduct that search right now, or as of 2 weeks ago, there was not. Today, we just launched the rebrand of the half marathon site after working on it for, I don't know, like 6 months, and it might be longer than 6 months, a lot of data. That was my dream, is to have this directory where people could do the first qualitative search for races and provide better access to that information. So that was what prompted the acquisition, and that's where it is today.
Cool. Amazing. I want to run a race where I can bring my dog and a stroller and
I think we all do.
Costume.
Yeah.
Something like that. The Berlin Marathon was last weekend and I had a couple of friends in town running it, and there's always these guys dressed up as beer.
Yeah.
And at the end, they hand out alcohol-free beer, which I love. Very German. It's interesting to hear about this kind of as search, because I'm already kind of envisioning it more as travel company or a travel resource, which I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that. And then also kind of that ties nicely into Rogue Expeditions. And I want to hear about your acquisition of that and figure out with that.
What you can imagine when people look up races is, I think people choose races for a variety of reasons, one of which is like, is it close and in the month that I feel like I'm going to be ready for it? And in that, it's helpful to know three or four options, but mostly that's pretty intuitive. If you're going to do all 50 states, or you're going to be like, oh, I'm going to Maine for a wedding, I wonder if there's a half marathon, that's where it kind of becomes the thing. What I had kind of realized, I think media companies are so hard. And I say this as a person who is not an artist, but I think it is a lot of art. I think there's some mechanics to it, but in order to generate content that people want to talk about and then take people into your brand and go, oh, I know what type of content this company produces and that aligns with my values, is so hard. I'm much better at saying like A to B and B to C is the way I do it. You tell me more volume, I do more volume. You tell me to do more X, mm-hmm. I do more X. What I kind of realized was running a media company where Google and the AI kind of wave, it's hard to imagine that in the future, a year, 3 years, 5 years, you're not going to be able to go to just like a Google chat and go, I'm looking for a half marathon that meets all these criteria, and it's going to generate a list for you and links, and it's going to change that pretty precipitously. So what use is the calendar? In between here and there, it's fine. What I realized was every time I trained for a race, I got injured. Every single time. Always injured. And I felt in people's running of half marathons that if you go and pursue your training, people go, what are you training for? And mm-hmm. if you are a cyclist, a very small percentage of people who are out cycling on the weekend participate in cycling races. And $120 or $130 billion a year is spent on this thing called cycling tourism, which means you can go cycle between the Netherlands and Belgium. You can go cycle around Sicily with your friends, and it could be fun. And you'll have a guy in a van behind you that carries your suitcases to the next location. You do 30 miles, you drink some wine, eat some cheese. It's like the best. And I was like, this sounds amazing. That's so cool. And I was like, oh, cool. I'm going to Japan. I want somebody to take me around Mount Fuji or the Kobe Trail or something like that. Because if you think that I'm going to go to a Japanese trailhead and figure out what technicality the trails are, and I'm not going to get lost. I got lost in an American English-speaking country. Like, there's no way I'm going to go internationally. I was like, why are so many people doing this in cycling and not in running? And there's a couple of mechanical reasons that it became more popular in cycling first. but I felt really discouraged that if I was training, I was only racing. That was the only thing awarded to me. The interesting shift in culture that we're seeing, kind of in the same way that the activity is the reward or the outcome, is run clubs became really big because just showing up to the run club is the reward, as opposed to I'm showing up to the run club in order to run the marathon. It's just I want to be social.
It's culture. It's kind of, I was talking to someone recently about this because it's becoming this kind of lifestyle thing. A lot of them have very cool brands and they're very, very hip.
Too hip. I mean, there's so, they're so cool.
I mean, yeah, there needs to be more that are less intimidating, I would say.
I love it because you need somebody to be like a little eccentric to move the culture forward. And then what you're going to have is like the offshoot that's accessible to everybody else. People have to feel like they can do, I think people are feeling empowered to do that now, but they introduced a new product category pretty much overnight. There was run clubs for years and years and years. And then all of a sudden everybody's writing an article about run clubs. And I think that was also a shift from the younger generation, like the Gen Z, not wanting to go to bars anymore to meet people. I think if you had sauna club as well, like you'd attract a lot of Gen Z people to show up to that sort of thing. And I realized that trail tourism wasn't really a thing, that the most beautiful places on earth are oftentimes like mountains, backwoods, deserts, glaciers. And if you were going to go to Morocco and you were a runner, you would go because there was the Marrakesh Marathon. You wouldn't go to run the Atlas Mountains or the Sahara Desert. And I ran around the streets of Tokyo and it was amazing. And I gained a certain appreciation and intimacy for the city, but it was not super crazy wildernessy stuff. There's one company that had been doing it in Mont Blanc, the region there between the Swiss Alps and France. And there was this other one that had been around for about 12 years in Austin, Texas. It was a husband and wife team. And personally, one of the things I realized about myself as somebody who tries to be entrepreneurial is that I realized I was a really sales-focused founder. And I always wanted to balance my skill set with somebody or a product-focused founders. And so when I found this company and they had been doing no paid marketing, they had done it for 12 years. They had a 55% retention rate of people who had gone on a trip last year, had gone, were on a trip again this year. People doing like two or three trips a year. I was like, this is an exceptional product. People love it. The barrier to entry or like the next step is, and this is the part of creativity that I think is a really interesting place I'm in right now, is it's not a new product category, but in the same way that run clubs became more mainstream, how do you make this for everybody that feels frustrated with the racing experience or feeling like they have to PR, how do you go, screw it, don't do it, stop it. There's another option for you. From a business perspective, we start at the core group of people, which is traditionally between 31 and 61 years old. Those are people who are injured, kind of over PRing, still love running, didn't have an outlet for them, and are accustomed to paying for tours or somebody else to help them with the organization of things. And I think in order to be, make it more accessible, the company has to, it has to go from a trail running tourism company to a running tourism enterprise. It has to inhabit so many more places in running culture, which is a creative task in itself.
And do you have, or could you share any visions you have for what that could become?
My belief is that there could be one company that is your password for global running. Which means if you want to go run the Shanghai Marathon, you could go with us. Also, if you wanted to stick around afterwards and do some mountain range there, we could take you there too. If you wanted to have an entire run club, have a trail camp produced for them in Flagstaff, because that's the place we're all, or in E10 Kenya, you could go with us. I'm really interested in running is having a lot of like challenger brands right now, which is to say that Satisfy Running and Bandit Running are these amazing, like, not your mom and pop's running store type vibe. They want to create self-authorship in running. They want to say runners can look punk rock, and that's the whole thing. One perspective I have on the future of the business is to take the stance of being like, stop racing. That's the position. We are your outlet for everything that is the beauty and joy of being a human being and being able to run. It's everything else. And then the other part is, how do you give humans access to the most beautiful places on earth to run? And that could be taking people to Mongolia. It could be anywhere in the world. But I think that's the broad tail vision of how big and wild and extravagant it could be. But I think when you take over a business, what I really need to do is just master the core fundamentals of who has been coming on these trips and what do they want? What purpose does it fill in their lives? Where do they want to go to next? In a way that's not just scratching my own itch. But I know that there's an opportunity there, that that's the long tail vision of the business.
Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, as we're talking about this idea of enjoying the process, being kind of in the moment rather than seeking an end result, have you either done research or, I don't know, thought about it yourself? If that would take really a lot of education and mindset shift of your audience, or is it people coming already, maybe Gen Zers already having this kind of intention, but maybe they don't have the budget yet to spend money on a guided trip? I'm kind of curious. I guess a lot of us millennials are coming to this on our own.
It's a huge question, and I think about it a lot, mostly because we are in culture, you and I, we see a lot of products that are being marketed to us, and they are marketed to us as we are millennials and we like sexy things. And most of the people who are runners don't really need that or see that as much as we do. We observe it because we kind of seek it out. So I think a lot about my primary demographic right now is not necessarily a 22 to 26 year old. And I think there are other companies that are going after that demographic and proving those individuals do want a non-racing experience. There's one in the UK called the Love Trails Festival. And then Jesse, it's launched something called Running Man, which is kind of like a running festival.
Okay, amazing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Generally, what it's trying to say is running is a part of your identity. You run a race or not a race, you just show up, you ice bath, you're just around other people. And that got a few thousand people that showed up to it. It's at a lower price point and it's a scale play. Whereas if you look at some of the leading tour operators for the cycling industry, you have a huge disparity between this company called Backroads, which will do $300 or $500 million in revenue a year, and this company called DuVine. And DuVine says, we only cater to people who are really serious about their cycling. And it's $6,000 to $10,000 per trip, but our repeat rate's going to be 60 to 70%, and you're going to call us for every family vacation and every family holiday. I think as an entrepreneur or somebody who likes to think big but has to be somewhat disparaging, is a big opportunity is there's this thing called marathon tour agencies, which will take people to the Berlin Marathon. They get bibs, they sell the bibs, and then they sell hotel packages on top of it.
Oh, okay.
All of those people, there's between 100 and 200 in the world. All those thousands of people that pay those tour operators to it are the types of psychographic and demographic who are willing to pay a premium to go have a running experience that is international and somewhat exotic. To start, I view it as a narrative shift. So I have to get it in front of those people. Are they watching good-looking 22-year-olds host run clubs in Austin? Probably not. It's maybe a little bit harder to reach them. But I think the long tail effect is that you're actually... things that are less sexy, I think, have longer staying. I think about this a lot. Sexy businesses are great because you have a lower cost of acquisition and network effects, because people will show their friends, they'll show up, and then they stay around for longer, maybe if your product is pretty good. It also means that maybe if you don't know how to retain them, the acquisition cycle has to go really quickly and really frequently, which is why people are really prolific content creators. If you're going in the other direction and saying, hey, there's 10 million people who don't watch these videos, how do I reach them? Because they don't read Runner's World. They kind of listen to like whatever podcasts make them happy, but they spend $1,000 on shoes every year and they do the local half marathons. And this is the thing that they were looking for. How do I reach them? And I think that's a creative struggle between it's narrative building. It's me going on podcasts. It's trying to create content that resonates with those people. It's maybe doing partnerships with races and going and offering free trips if you're running the Sedona Marathon or something along those lines where I already know that if you're traveling for that sort of experience, that you might be interested in my trips. What I love about the running community is we all kind of pool in certain locations. We like going to running stores. We like going to races. We like going to rug clubs. So there are little access points in a way that if I wanted to sell like a lamp, it would be way harder to find a person who needs a lamp. You know what I mean?
That's true. There's less community around lamps, I would say.
Right now, just wait a day.
I would love it because I need some lamps, but...
the Austin lamp community or the, you know. Just some bodybuilder.
Yeah, I have to do a tour. I have to sign up for a tour to Austin to take me around to all the land.
I know.
I would
just
love
some,
that,
just some guy who goes to antique stores and is some guy or gal that is really good looking, is in a singlet, and just goes like looks at antique lamps.
I would love it.
Honestly, it's pretty sick.
Yeah, maybe that can be your April Fool's email, that you're doing lamps.
I love it.
Or something.
Yeah, we're overrunning. Lamps. We're into lamps. Yeah.
Yeah, we're overrunning. Injured, no problem.
Yeah. Love light.
Sit and read a book. On yeah.
That would be great.
Yeah. Are you still working with the founders of Rogue Expedition, or have they stepped aside?
They're helping to transition the business a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly they were running it as a lifestyle business. They would produce the number of tours and the locations that they wanted to go to every year. They had great partners on the ground with local tour operators who would operate the transportation companies that are longtime, decade-long friends. And it's really been like a transition of the relationships, the historical information about like who are the people who are coming, what do they like, what are their preferences. But mostly it's been, they prepared an amazing business to be able to transfer over. The thing I learned is that, surprising, we launched two new trips, or one location to Montenegro in Albania, and it sold out within 6 hours.
I really want to go hiking in Albania. I really want to go next summer. It's blowing up though. People are over Croatia. They're going to Albania now.
Okay. Europeans know that. United States people on the fringe of travel kind of know that. So we're introducing it and sold out. So then what the past founders would do is go, we only want to go for 2 weeks. We only want to do two trips and we want to make sure that's safe. And so I'm in the position now where I'm like, that could be our bread and butter. We could be the Albania Montenegro tour company. So should we scale it up to 3 or 4? Do I have the infrastructure to get there? And that's stuff that they never really thought. It was never really important to them, but now are questions that I get to ask. And it's one of the real deep blessings about buying a company that has a track record already, is when we launch a new tour, people don't question whether it's good. And I think in order to launch one of these businesses from scratch, which is something I thought about, it is so hard to convince somebody to spend a premium price point with no track record. Even if you're like, here's the itinerary and it's beautiful and it's perfect. There is something where you put the Rogue stamp of approval on a trip itinerary and people go, it's going to be phenomenal, 5 out of 5 experience, which allows you to, the opportunity I saw was that trail running was growing. And one thing in trail is that it is easier to create content because the locations are intrinsically beautiful. There's a video that actually made me want to go to Chamonix in France, because one of the trail runners there, he wasn't even running. He was eating a baguette and brie cheese. And I was like, I got to go there.
Obviously.
This is my dream.
Yeah.
And I think that onboards a whole new set of people into going, like, maybe I would like trail running. And then what happens is there are certain events that become really high demand with really low supply because the trails can only handle so many people. And then there becomes a lot of interest for those locations as opposed for those races. Because you watch the video, you're not going to do the 109-mile race, but it's pretty nice to go run in northern Spain or in Mexico between Mexico City and Oaxaca. In order to go fast into establishing where the company that helps you go trail run safely in those places, that we needed already that proof of concept as opposed to starting from scratch. That's kind of the thesis of why it was more important to buy it than build it. And also, I'm not so great at product stuff.
Yeah, it's really interesting because everyone else I've talked to, all the other founders I've had on the podcast, all started the company from scratch. And it's very interesting to hear the strategy behind acquiring a company. It makes so much sense. And I'm curious what challenges you've run into. Like, have there been any things that are established within the business that you want to change, but there's some friction there?
So far, it hasn't been so crazy. I think one thing you want to do is for a company that's so, it wasn't so founder heavy that they couldn't be removed, or that they couldn't say we're transitioning to other parts of our life. The one thing you, just in terms of operating a business, is a lot of people make decisions very emotionally. So they will produce trips because they like the person who hosts the trips on the ground as opposed to whether it sells well. We have one of the best itineraries that goes to Nicaragua, but it doesn't sell nearly as well as our Italian tours. The owner would go and say, we should definitely keep this tour because it's the best one and maybe people will come back and we should continue to exert marketing effort in terms of people's attention on it because we love it so much. Mm-hmm. And the hard thing about it is I agree with you 100%, but also maybe it's got to look different. Maybe it can only be a private tour. Maybe it can only be on request only. And those are hard decisions because somebody who this relationship provided for their business for 3, 4, 5, 10 years, you have to go, I don't think we can do it in the same way anymore if we're looking. And I think this is the mechanics of if they spent $0 to acquire a new customer, then every trip was kind of the same. Then if we're starting to scale our growth efforts and everybody's going into one funnel, it means that every trip doesn't cost the same anymore.
Right.
And you have to make decisions about what your bread and butter is. So I don't think it's ever the time to throw away those itineraries, but I think it is time in the next like 12 months that I think really critically about like, how do we respect the relationships with those on the ground operators? How do we make sure that we can make commitments over a year as opposed to a week? Because our product right now is one size fits all. We have two trips to Patagonia. You can't make them, you don't go. And then what if I have a non-running spouse? And my non-running spouse, and I'm going to go to Patagonia for 10 days without her. And she's going to be like, what am I going to do?
You need to pair up with the sauna club.
Yeah.
You and the sauna.
Yeah. I think the evolution of the company is that you can come on that group tour or we can put together a self-guided one where you're doing the running and we can send a guide with you and your non-running spouse can go to a cooking class and we can put together a separate itinerary for them. And I think that's what happens right now as we make the hard decisions about what does the company look like for the next 12 months, that it helps it attract more of the people that we want to continue to go on trips and then kind of like advance and launch new trips to Japan and Portugal and things like that on top of what we're already seeing traction for.
This really feels so much to me more like a travel company than a running company. And they're both such behemoths of industries. And I'm kind of curious, did you have to learn about travel from the beginning? I mean, you don't have a story of traveling and getting stuck on a bridge. I mean, maybe you do and I just haven't heard it. But I'm curious, it seems like, I'm wondering if you had expected that going into it, that you're now running a travel company, or how you view it and how you see the different mechanics of both industries working together or conflicting?
Yeah, it's a huge question. The one thing that I had was I'd worked for this company called Summit before, which was kind of like an ideas. Yeah. 3,000 people would go to downtown Los Angeles and it was a campus. So in order to move a chair from one room to another room, you'd have to put it in a sheet and then a guy had to come and move the chair. You couldn't just move the chair. It was like logistics out of control.
Can I ask why? Why couldn't you move the chair?
Generally, what happens is everything has to be in its place because then somebody thinks that chair is there.
I see. Got it. Okay.
If you have a 50-person thing, now you have 49. Somebody's standing. Somebody's in trouble because they didn't have 50 chairs in their room.
Got it.
You have to go fill out a form to say that I'm going to move this chair over here, even though it's the best for the event and nobody will miss the chair if something goes wrong.
Sure.
There's no chair there. I had dealt with the complexity of these sorts of events. And then I planned my wedding. It was a 30-person event. And I did it myself with my wife without a planner. And I was like, this is a breeze. And then now we have 14-person trips with on-the-ground operators where events, if you've done them before, aren't really that complex. What time is the thing picking us up? What time is our hotel reservation? What time is dinner? And then where does the bills go? And it's that simple. The marketing part is a little bit more of the art. But I think it's really the sort of thing, it maybe feels intuitive to just go, if you really just think about the long term of the traveler's experience. And if somebody tells you it's going to cost more money, if you always go, is it better for the customer than just do it? That's your limit of, that's the decision-making process. That's our values. Then a lot of the stuff becomes pretty intuitive as to how you make decisions around travel. There are some idiosyncrasies around travel, which is like travel insurance and liability insurance. And what happens if somebody falls and hits their head? Do you have wilderness first aid responder certification? Did you do everything in your possible to take care of people? But outside of that, yeah, it's way more intuitive than running a media company.
Okay. I'm curious to hear again about how you kind of are marrying these two industries and if it feels like one more than the other it just seems like running one in and of itself might have clear guidelines, but then when you're marrying them, you're kind of entering new territory.
Yeah. It's cool or interesting because the way that the company was positioned before I took it over was adventure travel for runners, which means if you were booking trek travels or cycling vacations, maybe this was for you if you also were a runner. And I think the shift that I'm trying to make is it's running vacations. There is adventure parts of it, but the one issue that comes along with that is nobody searches for running vacations. Some people do, but they did it in kind of this smart way where people were like, oh, I want to do an adventure travel trip. And then they were also runners and it kind of married, as opposed to me going, I know how to find runners if I'm good at marketing or communicating that that's our value proposition. And then how do we kind of make sure that that's the through line, which is, are you physically able to produce this trip? Albania is way harder to run than South Africa, and all these different nuances that go into picking these sorts of things. I think that that's going to be a gray area for us for a little bit of time. Some people will be adventure travelers who kind of run, and then some people will be runners who want to run 6-minute miles and go up the mountain really fast and go really hardcore. And then I think what will happen is we'll start to understand that there's more demand from one side or for a certain type of trip, or that somebody will want to go and say, we want to do 20 to 30 miles a day instead of 4 to 10. And we'll develop trips for hardcore adventure runners, and then trips for mountaineers, and then trips for whatever, all through the lens of if you want to travel and you want to run on that trip and you want to do something like wildernessy, that we can accommodate you. Right now, I would say it's like in this migration phase from just being an adventure travel with a dash of running every day to being a running tourism company.
Mm-hmm. And people aren't searching for running vacations because they didn't even know it was possible.
They don't know it exists.
Yeah. So it's another education issue for you to get people to want to enjoy running without competition, which for me personally, I'm not very competitive, even though I love sports and watching sports and athleticism in general. But for me, it sounds great personally, but I think I'm in the minority. So you're doing this educating to show people how much fun it can be to go on a trip where there's no competition. And then also telling people like, hey, you can go on a vacation that's actually a running trip. So I'm curious how you're positioning it if you go to race as a salesperson, as someone who's really good at sales, how you're conveying that story.
When I did diligence with the company, I talked to a bunch of tour operators. And I was like, how do you think about growing individual destinations? And they were like, you want to run one location 100 times, not 100 locations one time. That's a key to running a tour business. Because what happens is you go target and build a really big acquisition funnel outside of like Peru. And then when somebody lands on the Peru page, if it's a 22-year-old, you have trips for young adults. If it's a 45-year-old, you have trips for families on the same page. So they can basically take one page and then spread it over 10 different audience sets. So they kind of like diversify the types of people who are coming into their funnel. If you go look up the search traffic for running vacation to Morocco, zero. Nobody's ever searched. And I'm the only person. It's one a month and it's me. I like this concept of you need force of will. You have all these theories about the world. And then what happens is you move forward and you reformulate those theories. And at a certain point, you just kind of have to take blind optimism that you're able to push. Maybe you're not the right person, but you're able to push through people's objections in order to say, this is a win. And you need incentive alignment. So if I went to a race director and I was like, listen, you just closed out your event and it was a banner year and it's exciting and it's a good PR story and good for your business. If we said the first 1,000 people that register, we're going to enter into a ballot to send them to Italy for free to run, because we already know you came to Boulder and Boulder's kind of like a nice mountainous area. Now 1,000 people are registering more early. Now somebody's going to write a story about how you partnered with what an innovative way to drive more people to this race. And we get the opportunity to just tell a story that now 1,000 or 10,000 or 20,000 people who are on your mailing list go, a running vacation to Italy? I didn't even know that was a thing. That's amazing. Could you do that with a running store? Could you do that with a trail running influencer that has values alignment with how you want to position the brand? It doesn't need to be an ultra runner. I have to be really discerning about who a person speaks to in terms of what their ideology is as a content creator or as a race. And then how does it make sense for our business. I'd love to go and say like, oh, I'm going to be everywhere. It's going to be like the fire festival where everybody turns their thing orange. And like now everybody knows that Rogue Expedition is, it'd be total vanity and ego. And it would be like non-effective. And afterwards I'd be like, I spent a month on that and I didn't get it. It was just silly. And I alienated all my existing customers and it was dumb. Mm-hmm. So I think these are slow rolls. They're done in phases and they are meant to just, because half marathons is a business where I've been talking to races for the last however many months and years, I have some sort of relationship with them where I go like, is that a cool idea? Is it not a cool idea? Could we put on the VIP tent for you? Because those people are intrinsically down to pay a little bit more money. What does that all look like for you? My thing is I only want to do it if it's good for them too. It shouldn't just be a me thing. It should be a multi-year. People are excited about it. The industry is too small for these short-term bets that don't pay off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love it because it feels very symbiotic. Your marketing also helps the race. And I'm also just picturing it as like an image of my mind of somebody like eating pasta in Italy and drinking wine while running as an image.
AI could definitely make that image.
Yeah. Raffle.
Yeah. These people are out there. And if they're running races, it's just about being a part of the ecosystem. So if like right now, $5 million a year is spent on running tourism in terms of trail, and however many hundreds of millions of dollars is spent on racing, you are building a new category. And there are ways to kind of brute force that, or there are ways to go and say like, the one thing I love about it is it's intrinsically beautiful and intrinsically valuable. Harder to do that if you're like, I don't know, selling KT tape or electrolytes or something like that. But offering somebody like a $3,000 trip to Italy is pretty sick as a giveaway.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just curious. I bet there's so many amazing stories from people about how these trips change their lives too. I'm sure you would have a ton of marketing content just from testimonials.
Totally.
Yeah. Well, this conversation has been really fun. Thank you for joining. I always like to end with the same question, which is, what are three of your other favorite organizations doing interesting things in the worlds of sports and creativity?
So I think there's three brands. One is Bandit. One is the Speed Project. It's called TSP. I also love Runna. And I think some of the things that stand out to me is in order to create a challenger brand, you need a mission statement that other people maybe would disagree with or is like somewhat controversial. So if you're like, we believe that everybody should have food, that's not really that controversial. It's like a good mission, but it's not controversial where that some people would go, I need that. And other people would go, I don't need that. And what I think all of these brands have really done is said, this brand is not for everybody. And we're designing products specifically for a group of people that want to prioritize A, B, or C. And the Speed Project is probably the most interesting one. It's kind of like this unsanctioned race where they say, run from Southern California to Las Vegas. There's no rules. Get there as fast as possible. You're allowed 7 people on a team and you can't register for it. It's everywhere.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's only influencers that show up for it. They get a van. They create content the whole time. It was the first of its kind. And you're going to start to see a lot of copycats coming out and being like, how do we innovate on the race experience? Because that's the coolest thing. A stage race where there's no rules, just go fast. And there's a lot of storytelling and they invite a lot of influencers. And I think it's funny because sometimes a business model is just do things prettier as well, or do things with a different mission statement. For 50 years of people using training plans, it's been PDFs, it's been Hal Higdon, it's been some guy with long socks who ran in the 80s that put together a training plan in an Excel spreadsheet. And then Runna came around and they said, we're creating an aspirational brand that produces training plans. And that blew everybody's mind. They were like, I don't even know what that means. But then they started to work with people that were aspirational. And you started to be like, if I was going to pick any training plan, I'd pick this Runup brand. They mastered influencer marketing really well. They mastered their brand really well. It was accessible, but aspirational. And it was just like this perfect line of like how to get people into their funnel. And then they have an exceptional product because they're like McKinsey product development people. Being in the running world for a long enough period of time, you just start to see when small things emerge that are different, or from a person that used to be at an ad agency and then just loved running, or something just is exciting about it. And then Bandit, if you follow them at all, man, they're just so cool. They're too cool for me, even.
They're very cool.
They're very cool. They produce the best video content in road running today. And I think that if you're going to be a good media company, you either have to have a lot of scale or you have to have a business model that's different from selling advertising on it. They have a community and a group of runners that care a lot about the brand. They seem mission and values aligned with them. And they create content with nobody else's agenda but their own consumers, which is the way to get really pure, beautiful content. And that's how they do it. I buy my Bandit stuff whenever the cool stuff comes out, but I watch every video. I'm in it and I talk about them all the time. So they like got me. So I think those have done just like a tremendous job of creating space for a different type of runner. And I think it expands the perspective of how people identify themselves. I go on a lot of groups and forums and people will be like, oh, I'm not a runner because I walk sometimes or I do 13-minute miles. And the weird labeling element there is unhelpful. So I think the more of these brands that come into place that allow people to kind of re-identify what the concept of a runner is the better for the industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the coolest things about running is historically, it's very accessible because all you need are legs and shoes. I think it's becoming more and more expensive. That's another conversation. But I think that's the cool thing about it is like anyone can be a runner and kind of breaking these narratives of I also run, I also jog. I do it more as a meditation than for speed these days. So I'm very on board with that. But just thinking about, yeah, everyone can be a runner really. And I think one thing that I've learned from talking to people like you and others that are running companies is just this passion is really unmatched. People love running. Runners love running. So thank you for sharing your enthusiasm with me today. This has been really fun.
Yeah.
And yeah, I wish you the best of luck with Rogue Expeditions. I'm excited to follow along. Maybe there's a trip one day for me for these slower, mindful runners.
Totally. If we launch more Albania trips, the way we do each trip is we got a lead guide who's leading the pack. One who does it right now is Kara, and she's, I think, the best trail running guide on the face of the earth. And I'm like,
amazing.
It's so unbelievable that she's on this team. It's like every day mind blown. And then there's somebody in the back. And then the back person stays with the person who's at the best. You want to walk a 14, 16 mile? We could do it. It's a lot of climbing.
That's awesome. And it sounds very inclusive.
Yeah. Got to do a lot of altitude training. But outside of that, it should be good.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Well, thanks so much, Michael.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.